Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Show. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is May the 20th, 2016. Always great to catch up with you at the end of the week so we can play that familiar game of catch up. And boy, there's so much to catch up on. So I thank you for joining me. Those of you familiar with me know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And ever since the attacks of 9/11, I've decided that it was important to provide the perspectives that I acquired during my 30-year career on how significant immigration is to national security, public safety, and a host of other issues. And that's been the mission of this person here and this program that I do every week. So I hope you find the information is helpful. Useful. If you like it, please pass it along to as many folks as you can. Join my Bucket Brigade of Truth, because we've got to arm the American people with the facts. We're not getting the facts, and we're not getting the truth from the mainstream media. We're not getting the facts, and we're not getting the truth from most politicians, which is why both political parties find themselves at war with what should be their base. And the base has left. And the base has left because they realize that the parties have betrayed them. You know, I've made the point when I've spoken with some of my good friends, former agents in law enforcement, including a couple of my buddies over at the FBI who used to be with the FBI. We are convinced that if anybody else did what the political parties are doing, they would be charged with racketeering. There is just no way about it other than to understand that campaign contributions have bribed our officials, have caused them to take actions that are illegal, contrary to their oaths of office, contrary to the best interests of America and Americans. Not because they're conservatives or liberals or Democrats or Republicans. Pardon me. These issues are not about left or right, but right or wrong. It makes no sense. It makes no sense that at a time when we face the threat of terrorism, that the 9/11 Commission report doesn't serve as the foundation for the actions of our government, doesn't serve as the source of guidance for our politicians. They try their best to ignore the 9/11 Commission report, and it's rare that you hear anybody invoke it. There are a couple of folks who will. My good friend Lou Barletta, congressman from Pennsylvania, Jeff Sessions, the senator, of course, from Alabama. There's a few others, Chuck Grassley from Iowa, Steve King from Iowa. They're willing to talk about the 9/11 Commission report, but how many other people do? And terrorism, of course, back in the news. Egypt Air Flight 804 went down just 2 days ago. Speculation is that it was a terror attack. Of course, it isn't over till it's over. We won't know what the story is until, presumably, the black box is recovered, the flight data recorder and the voice recorders are recovered. But the indication is that probably terrorism was behind it. Whether or not terrorism brought this plane down, there's been no shortage of terrorist attacks committed around the world and inside the United States as recently as December of this past year at San Bernardino, California. And so I find it remarkable that we have the downing of the airplane, and suddenly the news crews run to the airport and they capture pictures of the cops with heavy weaponry and the dogs and the whole bit, and they say, well, security has been ramped up because the plane went down in Egypt, or heading into Egypt, rather. Why is that the case? We know we're at risk. Why aren't we looking at the risk on a daily basis and not waiting for something to happen somewhere else in the world and say, look at that, the plane went down, now we got to think about terrorism yet again? we have to be considering the potential of terrorism each and every day, because the risk exists each and every day. This isn't novel. We've had terrorist attacks in Paris, in Brussels, in San Bernardino, in the Middle East. It's a steady drumbeat. It's the steady drumbeat. And, you know, I have to tell you, and maybe I'm dead wrong, but we've had an unusual number of knifings in the New York City subway system, and you have to wonder if perhaps at least some of the perpetrators haven't been radical Islamists, because we've seen stabbings in Israel and elsewhere by those who could not get their hands on guns, so they used knives instead. And it's rare for the news media to release the name of the people that get arrested in conjunction with the stabbings when arrests are made. And we live in a city here in New York where the mayor has seen fit to give hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens identity documents. And we call New York a sanctuary city. And I've written about this Orwellian business, sanctuary cities. And we can't use the word alien. When you talk about sanctuaries, and I was just with the Tea Party in the Villages in Florida. Aileen Milton did a great job putting the event together. It was wonderful to be down in Florida. And we were standing in this beautiful park, you know, with a babbling brook and birds flying and green everywhere, trees and bushes and flowers. It really was a sanctuary. And yet we call cities that block immigration agents from doing their job, not that this administration really wants them to do their job, but we call them sanctuary cities. Sanctuaries are places of peace, of tranquility, of safety, of security. How secure are you when hundreds of thousands of foreign nationals who have no right to enter the United States sneak into the country for reasons known only to them? Yes, they may just be desperate for a job. I get that. But they may be fugitives from justice. They may be criminals looking to come to the United States to ply their trades. They might be terrorists. We don't know. What we do know is that obviously anybody who would sneak into the United States does so because he or she knows that they could not be lawfully admitted. The reasons for not admitting an immigrant into the United States have nothing to do with race, have nothing to do with religion, have nothing to do with ethnicity. And I'm listening to the news today, and I don't care what network you switch to. And again, well, according to the latest polls, the Latino voters don't like Donald Trump. What do you mean, the Latino voters? They're not American? The black voters, the Jewish voters, the this voters and the that voter. How about the American voters? So we keep perpetrating this mythology. I've actually met people who were of the belief that somehow the immigration laws treated people who were Latino different from other people. Not in the law. All the law talks about is keeping out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who are mentally ill and suffer from tendency to extreme violence, or are sex offenders, criminals, you know, murderers, arsonists, rapists, drug dealers, bank robbers, murderers, they're excludable. Aliens who are human rights violators, war criminals, spies, and terrorists, they're excludable. Aliens who are fugitives from justice. And then we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge. America is going bankrupt, if you haven't noticed. Our cities are going bankrupt, if you haven't noticed. And also aliens who, if they worked, would be taking the jobs of Americans and driving down the wages of Americans who still manage to hold on to their jobs by flooding the labor market with a commodity known as labor. And by the way, it's interesting, if you take a lot of a particular commodity and dump it into the marketplace with the intention of driving down the value of that particular item, that particular commodity, it's an economic crime, it's a felony, and it's known as dumping. So what is happening is we are witnessing the dumping of labor into the labor market in the United States, and so we wind up with a disaster. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in light of what Mr. Kerry had to say at a commencement address at the beginning of this month. So you look at all of this going on, and the news media won't tell the truth. The politicians are running around in circles. The pollsters are out there spewing their nonsense. We got to get past all this. And we've got to understand that our immigration laws are at the foundation of that which is supposed to protect America and Americans. And those same laws, by the way, enable more than 1 million lawful immigrants to enter the United States each and every year. That's more than the rest of the world combined. Those immigration laws also enable hundreds of thousands of resident aliens, immigrants, to become United States citizens. Again, more than the rest of the world combined. So it's not about being anti-immigrant to say, hey, let's enforce the immigration laws. Let's keep criminals and terrorists out of America. Let's make certain that no American has to compete with a foreign worker for a job, which, by the way, is what the Democratic Party wants. And truth be known, I'm sure many Republicans feel that way. I know Jeff Sessions doesn't feel that way. I know that Lou Barletta doesn't feel that way. How do I know? Because I speak with them directly or indirectly to their staffers, but Lou and I speak regularly. This isn't what they want or what I want. Americans should come first in their own country. What a novel thought. And if you look at where we are today, and especially America's minority communities, American Latinos, American blacks, they're getting hammered the worst. But you see, nobody realizes it because of the way the news reports on the news. They come out and they say, well, Donald Trump, you know, his anti-Latino position. No, it's not. If you go into the Latino communities or any other ethnic immigrant community, by the way, and that includes the Russians, it includes the Asians, it includes the Europeans, it includes the Middle Eastern, criminals from those parts of the world, guess where they're going to move? They move to the ethnic immigrant communities that most resemble who they are. They come from the same country, the same ethnicity. They like the same music. They speak the same language. They like the same foods. And if they're looking for female companionship, well, it's a lot easier to do that in a community where the people understand you and relate to you. This is human nature. This isn't rocket science. But when they are criminals, they ply their trades among their own people. So the folks who come here legally, waiting sometimes for years to get that visa, they can't wait to come. They finally come, and they are excited because they think they're going to finally leave behind the violence and the craziness of their home countries, and they wake up to the nightmare that the bad guys have followed them clear across the world and are here with them in those immigrant communities in the United States of America. Got to stop. This isn't American, and it's not in anybody's best interest, and it's certainly not in the best interest of members of the immigrant communities. So when I hear the lies, the nonsense, the propaganda, you know, Trump and the immigrants, I can't speak for Donald Trump. But if you just stop and think about what we're dealing with, and when you look at the crime rates, and they just had another hearing before the Senate, on criminal aliens floating around the United States, killing and assaulting and committing all sorts of terrible crimes. Again, this is because we failed to keep them out of the United States, criminal aliens, and we failed to identify and remove them before they victimized more people. This isn't hard to comprehend. What's hard or impossible to comprehend is how the average American still doesn't get it, and how the politicians refuse to accept what should be an easy truth, that we spend almost $14 billion a year on either inspecting passengers and cargo arriving in the United States from other countries to determine whether or not to admit them, and supporting the Border Patrol to try to make certain that people don't circumvent the inspections process at ports of entry. If this really doesn't matter, then why are we spending nearly $14 billion a year and employing nearly 60,000 people to do a job that's unnecessary, since apparently Mr. Kerry and Hillary and the others don't believe it matters how you come here. Doesn't matter how you come here. Lunacy. And I've been writing about this, and I want to put the websites out, and I'm going to ask that you please go to those websites. If you're not familiar with me, this may be new to you. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for a number of years, I've been affiliated with a terrific organization in Santa Barbara, California, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And, you know, they've been hammering the issues from the environmental impact of this uncontrolled immigration to the issue of gangs, to the issue of unemployment, to the issue of the destruction of the middle class. I'm very happy to write for them. And they're right on the money. And their website, capsweb.org, is a website that you should be going to regularly, every couple of days, because every day there's new articles up. Every day there's new links up to different sources of information, because this is about being educated. It's one thing to say, I wanted to solve the immigration crisis. It's something else to understand what really needs to be done. The border by itself won't solve the problem. It's a simplistic view. Symbolically, sure, we got to secure the border. I'm not arguing with that. I don't want somebody getting all upset and saying, wow, Mike Cutler, what's wrong with him? He said we don't need to secure the border. No, we do need to secure the border. But I have come to compare the Mexican border with a wing on an airplane. Without the wing, the airplane certainly will not fly, but the wing by itself goes nowhere. Securing the Mexican border is one component of many, and they all have to happen simultaneously. I was having a conversation yesterday with a friend in another state who's an activist, and he said, well, at least let's start by securing the Mexican border. And I said, let me ask you a dumb question. When you say start by securing the Mexican border, if you were sitting in a boat on a lake and discovered to your horror that you had sprung several leaks, would you start by plugging one hole, or would you look to plug all of them as quickly as you could before you wind up at the bottom of the lake? Immigration has many holes in it. And in fact, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine, another place I'm very happy to write for. I am a columnist for Front Page Magazine. It is sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. And I called my article Border Security and the Immigration Colander. You know, a colander is that a device that we use to drain pasta. And what the politicians have been telling us is that once we secure that border, once we plug that hole, we now have a bucket. And you look at all these other holes and you say, is this really a bucket? Could you imagine that infomercial on TV at 3 in the morning? We're going to plug one hole in the colander and call it a bucket. How dopey do you have to be to think that that's a good idea or that it's a workable idea? So, again, we come back to why I do the writings that I do and why I do the speaking engagements like I did in Florida this past week. I'll be in Washington in June doing some more stuff. And if you folks out there become aware of speaking opportunities, let me know. I'd be delighted to come to your neck of the woods. This is about educating as many people as possible, especially as we go full tilt into this presidential election. People need to understand what we're dealing with. So I also write for Front Page Magazine. Finally, The Social Contract, which is a quarterly publication, their latest edition, the spring edition, should be out, I'm hopeful, next week. I write for them, The Social Contract, and so these are the three places where I do most of my writing, and it's about getting people to understand the issues, and what I like to do in my articles for the most part is either check out the stuff that's on the ICE or other government agency websites, look at their news releases, and dissect what they write, because very often what they declare to be a success really isn't so much of a success once you read between the lines. Having been an immigration agent for 30 years, having spent additional time involved in the political side, testifying before Congress, going before state legislative bodies, you come away with a very different understanding about the immigration system such as it is. And that's what I'm trying to do. And so now let's get back to John Kerry. Because on the one hand, we're being told we're ramping up security, the threat of terrorism. They might come and attack us again. They might. Like, this is a novel thought, by the way. And then you see the stories about how the lines at the airports stretch forever. TSA doesn't have enough people. TSA has nearly 45,000, the last statistic that I saw. We have about 6,000 or 7,000 ICE agents. Those numbers are not being published anymore. And probably at least half of the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, are enforcing customs, not immigration law. So with luck, we have 3,000 immigration agents for the entire United States of America enforcing the immigration law. 3,000. Now, hold that number in your head. 3,000 ICE agents, 20-odd thousand Border Patrol agents, 20-odd thousand inspectors at Customs and Border Protection, and the New York City Police Department has between 35 and 40,000 cops just for the little city of New York. It's a little pimple compared to the whole of the United States of America. 3,000 ICE agents. The key to effective immigration law enforcement, the key to restoring integrity to the system, is not hiring more Border Patrol agents. I mean, we could always use more Border Patrol. Again, I'm not saying don't, but if I were running things, my emphasis right now would be on interior enforcement. Having the resources so that when someone comes to this country, by running the border, we can hunt them down and arrest them. When someone comes on a visa and fails to leave when they're supposed to, or takes a job they're not supposed to take, or fails to go to the school that they were admitted on a student visa to attend, that there's some people out there who can track them down, arrest them, and put them before immigration judges. That's a big part of what interior enforcement is. There are other elements to that. I should write yet another article about it. God knows I've written enough about the interior enforcement mission. But understand the point. This is how you solve the problem. And the problem is solvable. The problem is most definitely. You know, the politicians tell us, oh, God, we can't do anything with 11 million. It's too difficult. We don't have the resources. It's too expensive. And they are too full of you-know-what. First of all, we probably have 30 million or more illegal aliens. And no law gets enforced more than a fraction of a percent. But the reason that the politicians from both the Democrat and Republican parties insist on this is because they want everyone to accept this notion that somehow we have no alternative but to give lawful status to unknown millions of illegal aliens who, in many instances, entered the United States surreptitiously, by stealth. They snuck in. They trespassed. There's no capacity to do any face-to-face interviews with that many people. There's no capacity to do any field investigations. There's no way of knowing if they've been living here for 6 years, 6 months, or 6 hours. You know, you hear these pundits on TV, well, if they've been living here for 6 years, how will you know? Especially when aliens run the border, there's no way of knowing. So we're told all this stuff that can't happen. Only one guy stepped up and said something needs to be done, and that guy was Donald Trump, and the Republican Party is going into apoplexy. I really believe that there are Republicans who would be far happier with Hillary winning the White House than Donald Trump because they know they can do business with Hillary. This is what they've counted on. No matter who wins, left or right, they get to do business, and that is the domain of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. That is the domain of Wall Street and the bankers and the real estate industry, because they know they can do business with Hillary. And when Donald Trump stamps up there and says, we're going to secure the border, we're going to take care of the problem, these characters over there are shaking in their boots because they're saying, my God, he's going to take us off the gravy train. What a novel thought. Imagine a president standing up for America and Americans. And truth be known, I'm registered as a Democrat. I've always voted as an independent because I hate both political parties. But this idea that you might wind up, hopefully wind up with a president who stands for America and Americans, folks, when you look at the mess we're in, what else would we want? When you can listen to what John Kerry had to say, I mean, this is really what blows my mind. John Kerry delivering the commencement address. And I know I spoke about this last week, but I'm just so rattled by it. I'm so infuriated by it. I'm seething. And that's why I wrote my article, John Kerry, Enthusiastic Proponent of Borderless World, how Kerry's globalist agenda renders him unfit for his job. Here's what Kerry said in part when he delivered that commencement address at Northeastern University. This is Kerry's words. I think that everything that we've lived and learned tells us that we will never come out on top if we accept advice from soundbite salesmen and carnival barkers who pretend the most powerful country on earth can remain great by looking inward and hiding behind walls at a time the technology has made that impossible to do and unwise to even attempt, Kerry said. The future demands from us something more than a nostalgia for some rose-tinted version of a past that did not really exist in any case. So not only was he saying, we can't secure the borders. Can't do it. Don't bother. Too difficult. We shouldn't do it. But he also told us not to do something else. Don't look inward. Now, isn't that a remarkable statement? Ignore the crumbling bridges. Ignore the potholed roads. Ignore the fact that so much of our infrastructure is in decay. Ignore the fact that the middle class is going the way of the dodo bird. In fact, on May 12th, I noted this in my article, CBS News posted an Associated Press report with the title, Middle Class Shrinks in 9 of 10 U.S. Cities as Incomes Fall. Don't look inward, because if you look inward, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to see America descending. You're going to see America crumbling. You're going to see Americans at levels unprecedented in history suffering from heroin addiction. Don't look inward, because if you look inward, you won't see much to be happy about. But he provided us with an alternative to looking inward. Look out across the world. Look at China. How wonderful are they? Their middle class is climbing. Look at India. Their middle class is going up. Their wages are going up. So don't look inward. And I read the whole speech. I got angrier. I got angrier. I got really angry, and then I got super pissed. Because Kerry's speech did not sound like the speech that should be delivered by the Secretary of State of the United States of America. John Kerry's speech sounded more like a speech that should be given by the Secretary General of the United Nations. Don't look inward. Don't look at how badly we're doing. Don't look at the fact that 1 in 4 American children now live below the poverty line. Don't look inward. Don't secure your borders. And don't look inward. In the world is this guy saying, what kind of imbeciles does he think we are? But this is the music that we keep hearing, and we're hearing it from the Democratic Party, the party that I'm a registered member of. It infuriates me on a level you cannot begin to imagine. I'm a Democrat because I'm a labor guy. I've said it before, I'll say it again. My biggest heroes were my parents. My dad was a construction worker. He was a tradesman, a plumber. And frankly, I don't think plumbers or electricians or carpenters or auto mechanics or aircraft mechanics or roofers or iron workers are less intelligent, less skilled than accountants or bankers or school teachers. You don't just get a wrench and they say, congratulations, you're a plumber. My dad's apprenticeship program ran years, and it's serious business, and there's real-world implications if they screw up. And you have banks running around talking about products that they offer you? Banks don't offer us products. Let's stop the lies. Three-card Monty is not a product. Products that banks claim they provide, for the most part, are scams, con scams. They're confidence artists. I mean, this is disgusting. And when you have the Secretary of State, the guy that heads up the agency that's responsible for issuing visas to foreign nationals, and he says, we can't try to set up a wall. So do you think he's really worried about how we're giving out visas to everybody and anybody? He stood there at that commencement address and was bragging about how in attendance at that event were students from 85 countries around the world, and his agency gave every one of those 85 foreign students a visa to come here. The most recent statistics show that there's nearly 500,000 foreign students, and they call them international students in the government websites. International. My backside, they are foreign students. And they're studying the STEM curriculum, you know, science, technology, engineering, math. We're being told, oh, our schools are incapable of cranking out those engineers and scientists and computer programmers we need. Meanwhile, we have over 840,000 1,000 foreign students studying the STEM curriculum. We have over 1.2 million foreign students altogether studying all sorts of courses. They're attending more than 8,000 schools across the United States, and we've lost track of them. Believe me, we've lost track of them. We can't find our backside with both hands and a flashlight. And by the way, this poses a threat to national security. And if you look at who's being educated in our schools, it starts out with China, then we go to India, then we go to South Korea, and number four on the hit parade, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia. Remarkable. I remember when I think about Middle Eastern students testifying before the House Immigration Subcommittee, March 19, 2002, precisely to the day, 6 months after the attacks of 9/11, to everybody's horror, it was determined that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta, the ringleader, and Marwan al-Shehhi, had been granted authorization to attend school in the United States 6 months after the attacks. So by then, the whole world knew two things about those two bums. A, they were dead. B, they were terrorists. But the inept and incompetent and dysfunctional Immigration and Naturalization Service said, oh, great, go to school. Oh, by the way, what kind of school was it? Flight school. I testified before a congressional hearing on this issue. March 19th, 2002. You can go to C-SPAN. You can still watch the video. You should read the words. Consider what those indignant members of Congress said that must never happen again. Not a single damn promise they made at that hearing has been kept, and it's more than 14 years. It's more than 14 years. So Saudi Arabia sends us thousands of foreign students. God knows where they are. A couple of years ago, year and a half ago, there was an ABC News report about how 6,000 students had gone missing in the United States. And according to the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I've come to call DHS, these specific students had possible national security problems for us. 6,000. Look what just 19 did to us on 9/11. And John Kerry, the Secretary of State, the guy that gives out the visas, stands there at this commencement address saying, we can't do it and we shouldn't do it. Forget about hiding behind walls. Forget about securing your borders. State Department is a major player in border security and consequently national security. So when the head of that element of border security tells you it's unwise and impossible to secure the border, does that help you sleep any better? Doesn't help me sleep any better. This is madness. And then he had the chutzpah, John Kerry did, at that commencement address, to invoke the name of two people killed by the Tsarnaev brothers at the Boston Marathon. I want you to think about that. And by the way, Kerry, when he looked at the diverse crowd, said that because of all this diversity, you had Donald Trump's worst nightmare. I got to tell you, and I'm not standing here as a spokesperson for Donald Trump because I'm not. I'm just telling you this as an American and as a former immigration agent. I never heard anybody from the Trump side of the argument specifically castigate people because they, you know, of their ethnicity. Not at all. And to turn a commencement address into a political event, disgusting, cheap, outrageous, that's not why you give a commencement address. But as much as that angered me, let me just get to the point that I wanted. He actually invoked the name of two women who were killed during the Boston bombing, the terror attack. And that's what's so amazing to me, that he would invoke the name of those people who were killed and understand something. The Tsarnaev brothers entered the United States with visas. State Department is the only agency that's empowered to issue visas. So on the one hand, he's talking about this terrible attack. And let me read this to you. And as we were reminded earlier, these are Kerry's words. You are still mourning the tragic loss of Victoria McGrath and Priscilla Perez Torres. even before on Patriots Day 2013, when Victoria was among those hurt by a terrorist bomb, this community felt the weight of a wounded world. So this morning we grieve and we celebrate all at the same time. I believe that Victoria was wounded, not killed. But the point of the matter is, I guess she was a student in attendance. Forgive me, I didn't check to see what her relationship was to the university, but I'm going to imagine that's why he invoked their name. So the idea that he's talking about the terrorist attack and singling out a couple of the victims, at the same time that he talks about how it's unwise to protect ourselves, unwise and impossible, that his agency gave out the visas, State Department. It was the State Department that issued a visa, a K-1 visa, to the woman who was involved with the attack in San Bernardino against State Department. So when you have the head of State Department talking about how unwise and undoable it is to secure borders, and we shouldn't even attempt it, I wonder what the marching orders are for those consular officials at U.S. embassies and consulates overseas when folks apply for visas. I'll tell you what the mentality is. Let them all in. Let them all in. Let's bring in competition for American students. Let's bring in competition for American workers. And the administration promises free college. But what are you going to do with the college education when you're up against people from a third world country who are willing to do a job that used to be done for $125,000 a year for $35,000 or $40,000 a year? And before the folks out there who are the cheap bums, oh, good, we can keep wage costs down. And I know there's some of you lurking out there, and there's a warm place you can all go. Because as you destroy the middle class, you are destroying the consumer base that you're depending on for your profits. There's a point of diminishing returns. The American people don't have money to spend, so whatever garbage you're cranking out, you can't sell it if people don't have money. You know, I've had people around the country say, well, you know, it's good if we can lower wage costs. It's not good. You're destroying the lives of your fellow Americans, and you're destroying the country as well. Because when Americans can't buy anything, companies have a rough time. When Americans lose their homes to foreclosure, the real estate value plummets. When people wind up on welfare and get public assistance instead of being able to pay taxes, the American economy takes it in the rear end. That's what's happening. That's what's happening. You have Americans going to work, doing their jobs, being called into the boss's office. It's happening all over the country. It happened at Disney. It's happening. It happened at Microsoft and HP and all those other companies. And what did they say? You're fired. And why were they fired? For incompetence? Oh, no. They were fired because they need a living wage. And they were fired and replaced by people from India. India, the country that John Kerry is wetting his pants over because their middle class is growing while ours is going away. Unbelievable. Do you know that last year India got the greatest amount of remittances of any country on the planet, over $70 billion? Of course their economy took off. And we're getting hammered to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, so our economy is in the tank. And John Kerry stands there in front of all these kids who can't wait to join the workforce and get their careers underway. And he says, how great is it that the middle class overseas is getting bigger? What in the world speech is that to inspire whom? How would you feel being a parent of a child knowing that you just ran up a student loan that looks like a mortgage payment and the Secretary of State of our own government is telling you how fabulous it is that overseas our adversaries or our competitors are doing so much better. And don't for a heartbeat think that China is not an adversary. Don't you even think of it. And they send us by far the most high-tech students, the STEM students. And just realize that a couple days ago we had a military encounter where their jets approached our jets, where they've warned us to stay away from their artificial island in the South China Sea. Our relationship with China is not much better than it used to be with Russia during the Cold War. But our greedy corporate idiots are building or have built factories in China because the labor is cheap. And China, of course, has no respect for intellectual property rights, for patent law. They steal everything. We hire their folks, and what do they do when they get hired? They get themselves into a company, they learn how to access the databases, and they go ahead and hack into our computers. The Chinese government is hacking us every minute of every day by the thousands. We're under attack, cyber warfare. And what are we doing? Training their computer programmers, training their engineers, training their scientists. You know, the communists said the capitalists will sell you the rope with which you will hang them. In Washington today, folks, with John Kerry, with Obama, with Biden, with all these characters, we're having a fire sale on rope. A fire sale on rope. And, you know, it wouldn't have been half bad if Kerry had just delivered a regular speech and said, I commend you on graduating. It's an exciting time of your life. Good for you, blah, blah, blah. But to say what he said was to stick that knife blade in between your ribs, you know. Don't look inward, but be happy that the other countries are doing so much better. But don't look inward. These were American kids at that university. But I don't even know if he was talking to the American kids, because I guess Americans aren't worthy of being spoken to by the Secretary of State. Maybe those remarks were designed for the foreign students and say, good for you. You're going to go home to a country that's doing a hell of a lot better than we are, and that's why we don't want Americans to look inward. Because if Americans will look inward, they'll realize that we're turning everything upside down in the United States. We're turning everything upside down. Obama was right. Change has come to America. And his cheerleader is John Kerry, jumping up and down for joy that the economy of India and the economy of China are doing so much better. And complaining that there's still poverty in the world, but we've got to go after the global poverty, not going after a poverty in America. I mean, think about that. Think about what he was saying. Here's what Kerry said, in fact. Let me give you Kerry's words so that there's no misunderstanding what he said. This is John Kerry at that commencement address. Today, extreme poverty worldwide has fallen below 10% for the first time in history. I'd like to know what he means by extreme poverty. I mean, think about that, right? But he's a cheerleader for the rest of the world. Today, extreme poverty worldwide has fallen by 10% for the first time in history. The revolution that is taking place on a global basis has brought hundreds of millions of people in India, hundreds of millions of people in China, into the middle class. And while that's welcome news, we're not satisfied because 700 million people still have to survive on less than what it costs for us to grab a couple of Dunkin' Donuts a day, because the gap that was referred to earlier between rich and poor remains far too wide. Where in that statement was there any concern for the average American, for minority American children living in crime-ridden neighborhoods where bullets fly past their windows daily, where there's no heat in the wintertime, no air conditioning in the summertime, where the filth is beyond belief? I've been in those buildings. I'm sure he has not. I am sure he has not. I have gone into buildings where we see what's known as a moving wall, where the insects infest the apartments, and you turn a light switch on, and you can't even determine what the color of the paint on the wall is, because the wall is coated with roaches and every other kind of insect you could possibly imagine. And they scatter like crazy when the light comes on. It looks like the football stands with the fans doing the wave. But we're not talking about that. What we need to do is not look inward, but rejoice. Rejoice, because hundreds of millions of people in India and hundreds of millions of people in China are now a part of those countries' middle class. It takes my breath away. It takes my breath away. Because immigration is the reason that we've destroyed the middle class in America. And when Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer back in 2009, and he has said it many, many, many times since, Greenspan's idea of wage equality, just like what this guy said, the gap between the rich and poor, too wide, except in America, it was the middle class and the poor that the gap was too wide. And Greenspan's solution, you can see it at the hearings. The video is still up. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. I put this out there every opportunity I get to get people to pay attention, is that we've made a privileged elite out of American high-tech workers, what they call the highly skilled. Under the immigration laws, highly skilled means people with advanced degrees. So you have Alan Greenspan saying, hey, the privileged elite in America, the solution is make them compete with foreign workers. If you could get those Americans to compete with foreign workers, you could greatly decrease that wage premium that they're earning, and then you could greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. What's a wage premium, folks? It's salaries. So what is Alan Greenspan saying? Flood America with foreign workers. That's what Gates wants. That's what Zuckerberg wants. Flood America with foreign workers. Make Americans compete with those foreign workers, and you could cut those wage premiums so we would narrow the gap between Americans who have skills and those with lesser skills. So the guy with the master's, the MBA, shouldn't really earn much more than the guy who dropped out of high school. Wage equality. To each according to his needs, from each according to his ability. I guess it was John Kerry's hero, Karl Marx, who had said that. This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy to de-incentivize, there's a word, success, hard work, achievement. Why bother? Why bother going to college? Why bother getting a degree? Why bother when the goal of the administration is to virtually eliminate wage difference between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills? And think about it. If you leave high school and get a civil service job, you will be earning roughly as much money as a guy with a graduate degree, especially when you're competing with people from India, third world countries, with a couple of differences. Number one, you're starting to work 5 years earlier, 6 years earlier perhaps. And you're immediately putting money into a pension fund. You're building up your time towards getting more annual leave and more sick leave. It actually turns everything on its ear because it becomes more attractive to become a sanitation worker than a guy with a PhD. Not that I'm knocking guys who do those jobs too. We need them. They're important jobs. Don't misunderstand for a heartbeat. But do you really expect a guy that's driving a sanitation truck to make the same money as a guy with a PhD doing cancer research? Because we're there now. We're there now, folks. That's what we're doing to America. And, of course, John Kerry's solution is do not look inward. It wasn't just don't think about securing the borders, but do not look inward. And the first time I read it, I didn't catch it. I had to read it the second time. And I'm thinking, my gosh, what is he telling everybody? Nothing to see here, folks. Keep on moving. Don't look inward. Don't realize the level of betrayal. Don't realize the way that we have stolen from you and your children and their children their share of the American dream. Because we're going to give that to the foreign nationals. That's why we have the Dreamers. And by the way, for all the complaints you get when you use the word alien, when you talk about immigration, oh, my God, you can't say alien. The A in Dreamers, alien minors. Suddenly that horrible word alien becomes palatable when they can link it to the American dream, a dream that no American should have. They want the American dream to go to people who shouldn't even be here. We're cutting the funding for early intervention for American kids with learning disabilities so we can pay more money for in-state tuition for illegal aliens. This is madness. This is sheer, utter stupidity. It's a betrayal of America and Americans. And Hillary Clinton has come out and said, hey, you know what? Obama's been much too hard on immigration. We're not going to have any second-class people in this country if I'm here. What is she talking about? Why do we bother spending $14 billion a year inspecting passengers seeking entry into the United States and securing the borders through the Border Patrol if it doesn't matter how you get here? And that was another article that I had written for Front Page Magazine, and I called it Why Bother? Why bother enforcing the immigration laws if it doesn't matter how you get here? Understand the kind of betrayal. And let me tell you the other thing that they're not telling you, and I've written about this extensively. They're telling us there's 11 million illegal aliens. That's not true. I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine. I call it the immigration clown car. You know, no matter how many come out of the car, more keep on coming. Well, no matter how many enter America, the number never goes up. Lewis Black did this great routine. You can look him up online. Called Red, White, and Screwed, and he was talking about how we're not able to find 11 million illegal aliens. That was during the Bush administration. So we're still being told about 11 million. But here's something you may not realize. Think about this one. If we were to legalize, which is what Hillary wants to do, and it's what Bernie wants to do, if we were to legalize all those millions of illegal aliens, they would immediately, the day they get their card, have the right to run down to immigration, immediately file an application, and legally bring all of their minor children and their spouses to the United States immediately. Immediately. So let's say, I'm going to be an optimist, that it's 30 million illegal aliens who will step forward. And by the way, when they say we're going to get the people out of the shadows, there is no money, no provisions for going after those who do not voluntarily come out of the shadows. You know, the people who know they have outstanding warrants, the people who know that they're known to us as being terrorists. If they don't come out of the shadows, no one's going to look for them. This will just be the people who believe they can get away with this business, or terrorists who know that they've kept a low enough profile that they'll be able to get away with providing false names. So the real bad guys that we need to dig out of the woodwork, there's no provision for going after them. But here's the other component to the issue that nobody talks about. If these folks file applications for their kids, and let's say that of the 30 million, only 10 million have children back in their home country, and let's say that on average they have three kids each, you could be looking at tens of millions of children coming to America legally and being immediately enrolled in our schools and being entitled to complete health care and everything else that goes with it. And if you think that the buses and the light rail trains in your communities are having a problem coping with the load now, if you think there are problems about water in communities and perhaps electricity, you know, we worry if the grid can maintain whatever, folks, you're looking at a human tsunami. Because what nobody is talking about is this chain migration, this family reunification business. If we legalize 30 million and only one-third of them file for their kids, we're looking at potentially tens of millions of additional children entering the United States to go to school. How in the world do we pay for that? What in the world would it do to the educational system of our towns and cities across the United States? For all the complaints about our crumbling infrastructure, all the complaints of our schools being overcrowded, not having enough qualified teachers, not having big enough budgets to get all the supplies we need to really give our kids a 21st century education, what do you think adding millions upon millions of kids who don't speak English into that system would do? And by the way, the Congressional Budget Office did a study perhaps 7 or 8 years ago, if I remember the year correctly, and they estimated conservatively that any child who goes to school who can't speak English costs 20 to 40% more to educate than a child who is fluent in the English language. Think about the impact that all this would have. Now think about John Kerry saying, don't look inward. This is about as crazy a betrayal as anything I've heard in quite some time, even for this administration. When the Secretary of State boasts about the growth of the middle class of China and the middle class of India, but tells Americans they must not look inward. Could you imagine a bigger betrayal? It's outrageous. And that's why I want you to share this information with as many friends and neighbors and business associates as you can. If we don't stop this runaway train, I don't want to imagine what America's future is going to be. And this isn't about xenophobia. But at some point, there's got to be a way to say we're oversubscribed, and we are currently oversubscribed. We have tens of millions of working-age Americans who've left the labor force, and they're not even included in the unemployment statistics. So everybody runs around, isn't it great? Unemployment is 5%. No, it's not great, and it's not 5%. And when they talk about job creation, they don't tell you if they're middle, these aren't middle-class jobs. Most of those jobs are minimum-wage jobs. All jobs aren't the same. They don't talk about how many jobs are lost that are much better than minimum wage jobs that have gone away. And that's why Bush and Obama, George W. and Obama, talked about wage insurance. When Americans lose their jobs to foreign workers, we'll give them some subsidies for 2 years. And then what happens? So there goes the big lie that George W. was telling. Oh, these aliens only do the work Americans won't do. Yeah, the reason the Americans aren't doing the jobs is they were fired, aided and abetted by our own damn government. And don't for a moment forget that it was the Republicans, I'll say it a third time, the Republicans who voted for the omnibus spending bill to give Mr. Obama every single penny that he wanted and did nothing to address sanctuary cities, did nothing to address the displacement of American workers. It's a betrayal by both parties. That's why we've got a problem. And that's why we, the people, need to make it clear to our alleged elected representatives that we are on to them, that we are not as stupid as that they hoped we are, and we're not going to take it anymore. Enough is enough. But I just want you to think about what would happen if our government was corrupt and stupid enough to permit millions of foreign nationals to get lawful status without an interview, without a field investigation, and then be given the absolute unequivocal right to bring all of their minor children here. What a picture that is. Again, not xenophobia, and I don't care what country they're coming from. We cannot deal with those numbers of new immigrants. And that's exactly what Hillary is promising us, what Bernie is promising us, and what I believe most Republicans had wanted, because that's what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants. Unlimited numbers of foreign tourists, unlimited numbers of consumers, unlimited numbers of students from other countries, unlimited numbers of cheap labor to knock down the wages of American workers. Unbelievable. Please go to my websites. Go to michaelcutler.net. Please visit capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. And again, please, I ask you, tell your friends and neighbors about my program, about the websites, about the articles that I write. We're in this together, folks. Knowledge is power. And my mission is to give you as much empowerment as I can by providing you with the perspectives that you're not going to get in the mainstream media. And once you're armed with the truth and the facts, I want you to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please get involved. I look forward to joining you again next week, next time, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. And meanwhile, folks, I hope you all have a very good weekend. Good night, everybody. See you next week.